Under a Pile of Books, and I'm your host, Calvin Park. In this episode, I sit down with Patrick Samphire, author of Shadow of a Dead God. We have a great time talking about his book. This is all part of the blog tour that's going on this week with Storytellers on Tour. You can check them out on Twitter at SOT_tours, or check out their website, storytellersontour.online. Anyway, without further ado, here's Patrick.
Hey, everyone. Well, welcome to this episode of Under a Pile of Books. And I'm here with Patrick Samphire, who is the author of Shadow of a Dead God, as well as several middle grade novels. Shadow of a Dead God is a current SPIFPO entrant. And so best of luck to you, Patrick, on that, and welcome.
Thank you. It's great to join you on this. I've actually been listening to your podcast for a while, so it's actually kind of weird to be on rather than just listening to you.
Well, I'm glad that you were willing to give us some time and answer some questions here this afternoon. So, with that in mind, I'd like to dive in.
Sure.
And Shadow of a Dead God, which I've talked about here on the podcast before, I really enjoyed it. It's this sort of kind of mashup of detective or private eye story with epic fantasy. And what sort of inspired you to do that kind of a, you know, combining of different genres or whatnot?
I guess I've always liked mystery stories, but beyond that, I think that mystery is kind of it's kind of a frame that you can hang a story on. You can have a mystery in almost any genre. I mean, obviously there's straight mysteries, but you can have it in literary fiction. You could even have it in romance. You can have it in science fiction. You can have it in fantasy. And it kind of provides that structure of a story that you can put other things on. And obviously in fantasy, there are plenty of other structures you can use, like coming of age stories or quest narratives, or things like that. But there's something that appeals about the mystery within fantasy, because it gives you that opportunity to be asking questions and to get the readers to be asking questions. And I think that fits in quite well when you have this kind of unknown world with magic and with a world that you're completely unfamiliar with. But this particular book, it came about in a kind of odd way, in fact. And it's kind of, I don't know if you've come across this thought experiment in philosophy called the Ship of Theseus. And in case anyone hasn't, basically, you've got Theseus. He's just, he's killed the Minotaur, and he sails back to Athens in his ship. And there's all sorts of mix-up about the wrong colored sails and his father jumping to his death because he thinks Theseus is dead. But that's not the important part. The important part is that the citizens of Athens decide to preserve Theseus's ship. And over time, parts of the ship begin to rot, boards have to be replaced, I guess the rudder has to be replaced, sails have to be replaced. And the thought experiment is, if you get to the point where every single bit of the ship has been replaced, is it still the same ship as it was? And I kind of feel like that's what happened to this book as well, because when I first wrote it, it was set in London in the 1920s, and it was this kind of mashup between P.G. Wodehouse, Arthur Conan Doyle's Professor Challenger books like The Lost World, and H.P. Lovecraft, Without the Racism. And I wrote this whole book, and at the end of it, it didn't really work. But I still liked the idea. So after a while, I decided to try and write that book in a fantasy world. And I did a version of it in the fantasy world, and then I kind of turned it into an epic fantasy with kind of some of the same underlying ideas, but with different characters. And that wasn't going where I wanted either. So I kind of dumped most of the underlying ideas and most of the characters. And it went through several stages like this to end up with this book that I've got at the moment, which doesn't really have any of the original book left in it at all. And other than it's a mystery, I suppose. And so the book didn't really click for me until I got it into this setting with this character. And yeah, so it's kind of hard to say where this book really came from, because it did come from 1920s London, and now it's set in a completely different fantasy world with different characters and a different plot and different fantasy elements.
But that's really cool, though, because one of the things I love is just hearing from authors how, like, what your process is and how you bring, you know, like just the whole process of creating a story and putting it on paper and the revisions that it goes through and you know, sometimes, you know, having to just kind of say this isn't working and toss it out and but maybe keep the seed of the idea or something like that. It's just really neat to me to hear about how this goes down, though I'm sure in the midst of it, it's probably quite frustrating for other authors. So that's really neat, though. And now you mentioned in passing, right, this character, your main character, yeah. Menick Thorne. And, you know, he is in Shadow of a Dead God, he is quite snarky and also self-deprecating. And it worked within the story and just, you know, for me anyway, it really worked. I liked both his snark and the way he was quite self-deprecating, even sometimes, you know, lacking confidence even, you know, to that point. But how did you go about getting the right balance, right, of kind of snark and putting himself down and lack of confidence and all that without it just sort of becoming too much, or on the one hand, or on the other hand, becoming just kind of a hodgepodge?
Yeah, it's definitely a difficult thing to do. And I'm quite a discovery writer, so I'll okay, write okay. quite a bit of stuff. And then if it's working, I keep going. If it's not working, I'll go back and try something else. And getting into a character, properly into a character's head, is very much a process like that. So I'm constantly trying to get his way of thinking, his voice down, and trying to make him into a, I guess, I wouldn't necessarily say you're always trying to get a likable person, but you're trying to get the kind of person that people are going to want to spend, I don't know, 400 or 500 pages of a book with.
Right, right.
And so there was definitely, he definitely went through various stages, and there were definitely times and early drafts where there was too much snark, too much self-deprecating, that it was kind of became irritating. He also suffered a lot more from anxiety in earlier drafts of the book, and I kind of toned that down without taking it out completely, and in fact in future books we'll probably see a bit more of that. But to a large extent it also comes down to revision, because and the process of revision is really how you get there in a book, and it's a matter of sitting down and reading through what you've got and seeing whether it really does. And it's like, is he being self-deprecating all the time? Is it that's too much, he's getting irritating? Or if he's being snarky about everything, then he starts to come over as a bit unpleasant and cynical and things like that. And I didn't want him to be a cynical character, because the city that he lives in, Agathos, is quite a corrupt city. It's one of the themes of the book is about the corruption of power. Mm-hmm, and so mm-hmm. you have corruption of political power and religious power and magical power in there. And I wanted a character who kind of contrasted to that. So I wanted him to be kind of an idealist, but an idealist who's been beaten down over the years. So a lot of his snarkiness and self-deprecation come from almost a defensive attitude to the city that he's in and these things he's having to deal with.
Absolutely. And you know, you mentioned the anxiety, and you get definitely, you know, some hints of that here in Shadow of a Dead God. But that's interesting to me as well, because, you know, I think so often in books, and this is becoming less true, I think, in you know, with modern contemporary fantasy, so often heroes were kind of, you know, or protagonists were kind of the heroic good guys who were just all feeling, you know, they didn't necessarily have struggles. If anything, maybe they were a little brooding or something like that. But I enjoy reading about characters that have, you know, authentic struggles and are wrestling with things and are dealing with many of the same things that people, you know, today deal with, but maybe doing it obviously in a fantasy setting or with magic or whatever. But I always find that really, really interesting. And so I appreciate when authors bring, sort of mental health into the full design of their characters. I think that's important.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think you're right. Over the last, I don't know, 10, maybe even 20 years, we've mm-hmm. been evolving fantasy towards more realistic characters and more three-dimensional characters. And I think particularly if you're going to write a book which is really close in to the point of view of the character,
yeah,
and you're really being inside their head, you've got to take these aspects that everyone has to some extent or another, and these conflicting desires, these hang-ups, these mental health problems they might have, and you have to actually at least acknowledge them and explore them to some degree. Otherwise, you're going to end up with a very paper-thin character.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Now, you know, another aspect of fantasy that I love, obviously characters, I love character-driven fantasy, but one thing in fantasy that's unique to fantasy that I just absolutely adore is magic. And in Shadow of a Dead God, the magic is fueled by literally decaying gods. And I think that's such a cool kind of fun concept. So how did you go about designing this magic system, or coming up with this idea for your magic?
Yeah, that's kind of funny because I genuinely don't remember where the original idea came from. Because I was actually the other day looking back through my notebooks, and at some point I just jotted it down. But I think it resonated because it kind of fits in thematically again with the story, mm-hmm. and the whole corruption and decay and things like that. And basically how the magic works is if a god dies in the mortal realm, then their body will start to decay in the same way that anybody would decay. And people who can kind of gather up that decaying essence are called mages, and they can turn, and that's raw magic that they can turn into spells. And, there's quite a lot of emphasis in this book and books I've planned on the kind of relationship between characters and the gods and so on. And mm-hmm. it offers a lot of opportunities, I think, for possible stories, because getting hold of power requires you getting hold of a dead god, potentially, or part of a dead god. And if you can get a relic of a dead god, then you have access to power. And that also will then, of course, offer the opportunity, will someone try to kill a god to get the power? If so, how do you go about killing a god and things like that? And to put limitations on it, I also came up with this idea of something called ash, which is the remnants of a different dead god that essentially neutralizes magic in all forms, and this gives another center of power with it being controlled by this group called the Ash Guard, who police mages as well as other supernatural things. So yeah, I don't know how exactly I came up with it, but when I did come up with it, it offered so many story opportunities and so many conflicts of power that it seemed absolutely perfect for the book.
Yeah, it's I agree, and you know the way it plays out, you know, I always enjoy when magic and religion, which are often connected in fantasy, mm-hmm. you know, I always enjoy it when those things play a role in the story, and that's certainly the case in Shadow of a Dead God, and I really love those aspects of it. So I'm very glad for that, and I can't wait to read subsequent novels where we get a little more, you know, information or explanation or whatnot. You know, I was I am a fan of Dungeons and Dragons, uh-huh. and you know, some of what you're talking about makes me think a little bit of like the Time of Troubles storyline in the Forgotten Realms,
right,
which
yeah.
For folks who might be familiar with that, you know, you've got a lot of gods who are essentially dying or having their portfolios stripped from them or that kind of thing, and other people, you know, kind of coming along and becoming new gods and picking up that power. It's quite different from what we're talking about in Patrick's novel, but it's still that question of power and what are you willing to do to get it and keep it, and you know, that kind of thing. It definitely provides for some interesting story fodder.
Yeah, absolutely, and it's one of those things. Fantasy is again exploring more now, which is the relationship between people and gods, and mm-hmm. In some of the older fantasy novels that I grew up reading throughout the kind of the 80s, gods were much more distant and powerful, and sometimes you would have the dark god who was evil, who you had to defeat.
Right.
But there wasn't a great deal of exploration of how things would change, how societies would change if you actually had gods coming down among you. And I think this is something that fantasy is doing now, and it's something I really enjoy reading and writing about.
Yeah, I think that's one of many areas that fantasy authors have really begun to explore much more. Again, I think especially in maybe the past two decades or so.
Mm-hmm.
Now, something else that is true in the past certainly two decades, really probably even just the past 10 years, is we have seen the rise, especially in the science fiction and fantasy genre, of self-publishing.
Right.
And now you have some traditionally published middle grade novels.
Right.
And you have self-published Shadow of a Dead God. And so I'm curious to know sort of how does your writing process maybe differ from writing through to publishing between, say, your middle grade books traditionally published and your adult fantasy, which has been self-published?
Yeah, in terms of the actual writing, there's not a great deal of difference, I mm-hmm. think, between mm-hmm. writing middle grade and adult, other than adult is a bit longer and you're more like to have swearing or explicit sex and slightly more explicit violence in it. But otherwise, mm-hmm. the actual mm-hmm. writing process is pretty similar. At least it is for me anyway. And but yeah, it's choosing to self-publish the adult novel was very much up in the air. I was all the way through until really a couple of months ago, I hadn't decided whether I wanted to self-publish this or follow the traditional publishing route with it. And I was kind of 50-50 on either direction, because there's a lot of advantages in traditional publishing.
Mm-hmm.
There's people who do a lot of the work for you, for everything, for, you know, the covers, the editing, a lot of the marketing and publicity, and just the technical stuff of getting a book out there. And they give you money for it as well, which is always nice. However, there are big disadvantages in traditional publishing. There's a lack of control over it, and as an author, you're in control of the text of the book, although an editor will have input on that. But you don't control the cover of the book. You don't necessarily control the title of the book. You certainly don't have any control over when it's published or how much it costs. And I definitely had some experiences with the traditional publishing that kind of burned me a bit on it, in that my first middle grade book, it took 4 years between when I sold it to the publisher and it appearing in the bookstores, which is a crazy amount of time. And it's unusually long, but still, it's rarely less than a year or a year and a half for this kind of thing to happen. And we actually, I had started doing queries to agents about this book at the same time as I was kind of researching all of the self-publishing stuff and looking for cover artists and all these kind of things and finding out about advertising. And then we had this pandemic come along. And at that stage, of course, things stopped. Publishing didn't stop completely, but a lot of books were pushed back. A lot of people weren't working in the offices. And it struck me that an already slow process was probably just going to become much slower. And at this stage, I think I'd figured out what I needed to do this book myself. And I'd self-published some short stories before, but that was just short stories I'd had published elsewhere, and I just put them up on Amazon and elsewhere for sale if people wanted them. So, but this time I went through, figured out the whole process, and it seemed to me that I might as well just go ahead and do it, and then it could be available to be bought a month later, and I would have complete control over it. And it's been an interesting experience. It's a lot of work, but I'm not sorry I went this way. Let's put it that way.
Well, I'm glad. And I'm glad because it means that, you know, selfishly, I've gotten to read a book I enjoy and not wait, you know, some indeterminate amount of time into the future. So now, Patrick, you know, you've written fantasy, you know, and whatnot, and we've talked a little bit about, you know, the magic systems and characters and all that. I'm curious, though, as both an author and a reader, what kind of draws you to the fantasy genre?
Yeah, that's a good question. I've always read fantasy. As far as I can remember, I can't remember when I started reading, but it would have been with children's books. I very clearly remember my father reading The Hobbit and The Lord of the Rings to me and my brother at bedtime every night, and that was very influential. But I think what really draws me to it is there's this kind of sense of possibility, and you're not constrained by mundane things, if you see what I mean. There are always going to be constraints, right? And you put constraints on yourself in a story, but you get to choose those constraints, and it just opens up what you can write about a lot more. And you can write about the same themes, the same topics, even same kind of characters as you can in any other genre, but you can also do something completely different and original with them. And I must admit, I sometimes read books or watch shows that are not fantasy, and I think, this would be great. Now just put some magic in it.
Yeah, right. No, I couldn't agree more, you know. Now, kind of going along with this theme, if you could have dinner with any character in all of science fiction and fantasy, who would it be and why?
Now, I think this is the question everyone has the most trouble with. And you're interested.
That's right. That's right.
I listen to someone being interviewed, they're like, but it's, I feel like I ought to choose some big, serious character with a lot of wisdom. But in fact, I think I'm going to choose two people. I'm going to choose Merry and Pippin from Lord of the Rings. Before the adventure starts, and I would have dinner with them in the Green Dragon, and it would be fun. There would be stories told. There would be drinking. There would be dancing. There would be music, and it'd be a fantastic evening. And then everybody would go home, and everything would be fine. And I don't know if that's just because I've been stuck in the house for 2 months now, but that kind of seems like a really fun thing to do. So yeah, that's what I would go for.
I love it. And you know what I so often find interesting with this question is, often, you know, whenever somebody mentions, you know, oh, I'd have, dinner with, you know, such and such a character or with this character, there's always, because our characters in fantasy are often larger than life, there's always this element, right, where it's like, oh, like, but would you survive that dinner? Like, or what would be the outcome?
Right.
And I love the idea that, like, Merry and Pippin, like, you'd just go have a great time, right? You'd share some beers, you'd have dinner, you'd have singing, dancing, whatever, you'd have a great time. And then you'd go home and it would be okay.
Yeah.
Like the world would not end.
I mean, you might end up in trouble and you might have to, you know, run away from someone at
that's
the end
right.
of the night, but that'd be as far as it would go. Absolutely.
No, I love it. I love it. That's a great response. So, Patrick, where can folks find you and your books online?
Okay, well, the easiest place is my website, which is just patricksamphire.com. I'm also on Twitter, which is twitter.com/patricksamphire. I am on Facebook, but I tend to accept friend requests there if I don't know someone, because there are too many spammers and I'm fed up with people trying to sell me sunglasses and stuff like that on there. So, but you can... If you are on Facebook, you can find me normally on the Spoofbow group or on the Fantasy Faction group there, and you can always stop by and say hi. And I'm also, my books are on Goodreads at goodreads.com/PatrickSamphire again.
Awesome. Well, Patrick, thank you so much for taking some time out of your day to talk with us and share about your experiences and your process and your books. I've really enjoyed it, so thank you.
Well, thank you. It's been great. I really enjoyed being on.